This is Marshall Latham here. This is a little bit different of an intro, where I think this is the last Comics Cave episode that has not been available on the main feed. And so I can't really plug anything on patreon.com that you don't have access to. But I am working on some new things for the Comics Cave, and I'm going to do it in a little bit different format. So I guess you can look forward to that coming up. And I'm trying to design it in a way where I can put stuff out on the main feed, but there'll even be more stuff on Patreon for you to get to. If you would like to see the other things that are extra and available over on Patreon, you can go to patreon.com/journeyinto and take a look at it. Every month or so, I do put up some comics clips where I post snapshots from some of the comics that I've been reading or that relate to a holiday or something like that. And I've only been putting those on Patreon. So that's one thing. That's more of a visual thing than a podcast thing. But anyway, I will let you get to this episode of the Comics Cave where I talk about the Silver Surfer. Welcome to the Comics Cave.
Whoa. Can you turn down your headlamp there a little bit? You're kind of blinding me there. Yeah, there's actually plenty of light over here, so you can go ahead and turn off your headlamp altogether. There you are. Oh, thank you. Yes, now I can see. Yeah, I'm over here by the stalagmites. It's kind of a nice area where I keep my comics. As I've already said, welcome to the Comics Cave. And today we're going to talk about some of the cosmic stuff from the Marvel Universe. We're going to talk about the Silver Surfer. And I wanted to find something that there were several options that I could have done for this episode of the Comics Cave. There was the middle part of this Prodigal Son series that came out a couple years ago. It wasn't a good series. The character was kind of stupid, but I really liked the Silver Surfer episode that was the second of three. But as I read through it, I'm like, well, there's not enough there to really hang a whole episode on. I could have probably done that as like the offshoot for this, but I chose something else that I'm going to do for the offshoot that I think you'll enjoy. Another one of my favorite characters from Marvel. But anyway, yeah, there was this Silver Surfer Dark comic or limited series that came out a year or so ago, or I'm sure it's been longer than that. And I thought about doing that, but that's five issues. And there was some stuff in it that I didn't really care about, but there was other really cool Silver Surfer stuff in there that I could pull little things out of. But again, I didn't want to hang a whole episode on that. But anyway, I found something. I went back to the, I don't know, what I consider, well, I wouldn't say the classic era of Silver Surfer, because the classic era of Silver Surfer was back in the 60s and 70s when he was first introduced and when, well, I'll get into his history here in a little bit, but what would you call it? The Renaissance era of the Silver Surfer when Jim Starlin took over the book and really created everything, led up to the Infinity Gauntlet, did all the Infinity crossovers, and a lot of cosmic stuff. It's really his sweet spot at Marvel. I haven't read any of his DC stuff, but at Marvel, I remember him from a lot of this. It was really some of the stuff in the 90s. I mean, after Infinity Gauntlet was such a big hit, the Infinity stuff kind of became too much, and it went into the extreme 90s stuff, especially I think with Infinity War. But he was like one of the best things out of the 90s comics. The 90s had a lot of things that were crazy and weird and stupid and kind of drove me away from reading comics, to be honest. And I think that's the case for a lot of people that read the comics in the 80s. But really, all the stuff with Silver Surfer and the Infinity Gauntlet and Thanos and all kinds of things like that. Really cool and really good stuff. Now, you heard me say Thanos. That's how I pronounce his name. I know a lot of people say Thanos. I think that's what they said in the MCU, right? They didn't, or did they say Thanos, or did they go back and forth? I've always pronounced it Thanos, and it's hard for me to say Thanos. I do say it every once in a while because that might be the correct way, but yeah. And Thanos is in here a little bit today, but not a lot. It's right in the middle of the lead up to Infinity Gauntlet. And I mean, it went on for like over a year, like a year and a half when Jim Starlin took over the book. He started right out. Well, anyway, but I guess since I'm talking about Jim Starlin, this is his run from the 90s, but he, you know, he was writing stuff in Marvel Comics back in the 70s. And again, he did a lot of the cosmic stuff. I mean, he is the one who created the character of Thanos in the first place. And so that's why it's such a near and dear character to him. But yeah, so back in the 70s, he created Thanos. He did a lot with Captain Marvel, the original Captain Marvel, the Marvel Captain Marvel, and Adam Warlock. I don't think he created Warlock, but he did a lot with him in the 70s. And then again, as part of this 90s renaissance era for the cosmic universe, he brought all of his favorites back, all these cosmic characters that he dealt with in the past. And so, yeah, he's a great writer. He's also an artist. I don't know if he considers himself more of an artist than a writer. I think he has a lot more artist credits or penciling credits or whatever than he does writing, but maybe not. Maybe it's about the same. But anyway, he's really great writer. I really enjoy his stories and the way he develops things. And then the artist of this, well, we're going to be talking about issue number 48 of volume 3 of the Silver Surfer. So this is the third series that the Silver Surfer was a part of. And we're going to be talking about issue 48, which is titled Past Sins. And it's a very Silver Surfer centric issue in the middle of all this other stuff that's going on, like I said, in the buildup to Infinity Gauntlet. And so, yes, let me give the credits. That's something I haven't been doing on these Comics Cave episodes, is giving the full credits for everything, and I really should. These people are the creators. They're the people that lent their talents to this, so I should note everybody here. Jim Starlin is the writer. Ron Lim is the penciler, and he does a great job. I don't know if he's trying to ape Jack Kirby, but he's really good at drawing things in space and planets and all this kind of, I mean, everything. He's a good artist in general, but he does a great job capturing the vast enormity of space and just making it look really cool. I like Ron Lim quite a bit. He's been around for a long time as well, going back to the 70s and stuff, but he's the artist, and Jim and Ron Lim, Jim Starlin and Ron Lim were on a good run of this Silver Surfer comic for a while. So we have Tom Christopher as the inker, Tom Vincent as the colorist. I'm going to say Ken Bruzenak as the letterer, and Craig Anderson as the editor of this comic. The cover date is April 1991. And the cover date was not the date that it came out. I can't remember if the cover date is always earlier or later than the actual date that it hits the stands. Oh, and I guess the other credit there is Tom DeFalco at this point at Marvel was the editor-in-chief. And so before we get into this issue in particular, I wanted to talk about the Silver Surfer as a character. You probably already know all this stuff, but I'm going to assume that you don't. And I'm going to just give a quick little breakdown of who the Silver Surfer is. I mean, he's a classic character outside of comic books. And, you know, I think it's largely due to Jack Kirby and how he drew the Silver Surfer. And but I always think of Zoe Satriani. He's a guitar player. And he came out with a song and I think a whole album called Surfing with an Alien. And it features the Silver Surfer on it. So, I mean, he's really a cultural icon, even outside of people that follow comic books, because of the image of the Silver Surfer. But he was created by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby back in the Silver Age of comics, back in the early episodes, back in the early issues of the Fantastic Four, which, of course, was the first Marvel comic, you know, created the Marvel Age of comics and everything. And Fantastic Four 48 was the first appearance of the Silver Surfer back in 1966. And there's a 3-episode arc there of the Silver Surfer coming and then followed by Galactus, because of course the Silver Surfer is the herald of Galactus. And so there's 3 issues there of the Fantastic Four that introduces both Silver Surfer and Galactus. And the Silver Surfer was an alien that grew up. He's a humanoid guy that grew up on the planet of Zenla, somewhere out in the universe. And his world was going to be destroyed by Galactus. Galactus is this giant or cosmic entity that has a constant hunger and needs to feed on the energy of planets. And so he goes around devouring planets and sucking all of the energy, destroying all life and everything on the planet. And he's a force of nature in the universe. And he has heralds that go before him and find the worlds for him to devour. And then he shows up with all of his advanced machinery and takes out the world. I forgot to say when I was explaining who the Silver Surfer was, when he was on this planet of Zenlob, his name was Norrin Rad. And, you know, he lived a life on Zenla and was kind of a scientist taking after his father, I believe. When he knew that Galactus was coming, went out and bargained. In fact, I think those were his exact words, right? He said, "Galactus, I have come to bargain." And then Galactus killed him. But then he came right back, like he was in a time loop, and he said again, "Galactus, I'm here to bargain." Well, maybe that was something else. Maybe I'm confusing that with something else. I don't know. But he would become the herald of Galactus, and that he would find him a world if only Galactus would not devour his world of Zenla. He wanted to save all the people of Zenla. And so he struck up a bargain with Galactus. Galactus changed him into the Silver Surfer, gave him the surfboard to fly around the galaxy, or to fly around the galaxy and the universe, I guess, and throughout space, and gave him cosmic powers, and he became the herald. And that's how we were introduced to him, as the Herald of Galactus, like I've already said. So they were introduced in Fantastic Four 48. I think that issue is titled The Coming of Galactus. So there's another coming of a comic book character. But yeah, very classic, you know, when you think of Jack Kirby, this is what you think of, the Silver Surfer and Galactus. At least that's who I think of. And of course, he rebels against Galactus to save the Earth. He sees the value of these human beings. He meets up with Alicia Masters, who is, among other things, the Thing's girlfriend, Ben Grimm's girlfriend. He sees the value and comes to appreciate human life. And so he fights with the Fantastic Four against Galactus and helps to save the world, to save the Earth. As a punishment for that, Galactus forces the Silver Surfer that he can't leave Earth. If he tries to leave, there's a barrier around Earth that prevents the Silver Surfer from leaving. And so Silver Surfer was featured in a lot of different comics, most often the Fantastic Four. He had his own comic book for a while where, and he was kind of a favorite character of Stan Lee, where he you know, Stan Lee kind of used him as an outside perspective, looking at humanity, looking at social issues and, you know, viewing the world through an alien lens and coming to understand who humans were there with all their faults and everything. And, but he was stuck on Earth for years and years and years after, you know, so from like 66, when this, that issue came out, up until, you know, 1987, I think is when this volume 3 series of the Silver Surfer came out. And at that point, they were able to figure out a way that he, with the help of the Fantastic Four, they were able to figure out a way for him to escape Earth and be free and be able to surf the cosmos and not have to stay on Earth. But for his first two runs, it was his adventures on Earth, and he was just had this massive power. And so, you know, I haven't read any of the old 70s runs of Silver Surfer. And I should probably go back and do that at some point, because I'm sure I would enjoy it. I think he was one of the original Defenders, right? When the Defenders came out, I think it was the Hulk, Doctor Strange, and the Silver Surfer who were the first members of the Defenders. And yeah, so anyway, there's a whole rich history there of him in comic books before 1987, when he got his own comic and he was able to go out into space and do cosmic stuff. And I read this comic avidly when it first came out, because I really did like the Silver Surfer, even though I hadn't read a lot of his 70s stuff, but I had read everything of that he had done in the Fantastic Four. So, because he's featured there often. And then I think in that first issue too, he went and visited with Galactus, and Galactus said, yes, fine, you're free. You're able to, you know, he's had other heralds since the Silver Surfer, and we'll meet one of them here in a minute. But anyway, so yes, he was officially set free also by Galactus. And so here we go. Here he goes. Now, starting when Jim Starlin took over Silver Surfer on issue 34, I believe, he brought back Thanos. And like I said, started this lead up to the Infinity Gauntlet and everything beyond that with Thanos. Because back in the day, Thanos was killed or turned into stone and killed or something, whatever, because he was trying to gather the Infinity Gems. I know, I want to say stones because the MCU uses the Infinity Stones. But back in the day, they were called the Infinity, well, actually, if I go further, back in the day, they were called the Soul Gems. And he was trying to collect all the Soul Gems so that he could, I don't know, I can't remember what his goal was there, to like punch a hole in the galaxy or something to, I don't know. It wasn't that he was trying to kill off half of the universe. That is why he wanted the Infinity Gems, that in this time frame, the 90s. But anyway, they were able to stop him. I think Adam Warlock was killed at that point, but his soul went into the Soul Gem, but he was able to, I don't know, somehow project himself outside of the Soul Gem and turn Thanos into stone. And so from that point on, Thanos was dead. That was back in, I want to say the early 70s or the mid 70s. And so Thanos has not been a thing up until now when Jim Starlin takes over the Silver Surfer comic. And so for the last several issues, since Thanos was reintroduced into the comics and, you know, pretty much raised from the dead. In fact, Death herself gave him a new body and put his soul into there and gave him a mission. He was a slave essentially of Death, and his mission given to him by Death was to kill off half of the universe, because she saw an imbalance in the universe of souls or whatever. And so she gave him the mission to kill off half of the universe. And in pursuit of that, and there's a two-issue limited series where Thanos goes out and figures out he needs to collect all of the Infinity Gems again, or the Soul Gems, but then he prefers to call them the Infinity Gems because he's learned their true purpose and their true nature and how to really unlock the power of the Infinity Gems. I want to say stones, but I'm not going to, because they were never stones. They were always the gems, Infinity Gems, not the stones. So anyway, there's a 2-issue limited series where he goes out and he collects all of, and it's really good. I mean, it's deserving of its own Comics Cave episode at some point. I really like that comic as well. But again, I'm trying to get away from Thanos because he has really a very tiny part to do with this episode or this issue of the comic. And so I need to stop being distracted talking about Thanos and get back to this issue here. But I guess we start off with another character that you may recognize, at least his name, from the MCU. And we start off this issue with Silver Surfer and Drax the Destroyer flying through outer space. So the Silver Surfer faced off with Thanos a couple of times before he went out and got all of the Infinity Gems. And now him and Drax just faced off with Galactus after he obtained all of the 6 Infinity Gems. And they got beat down pretty hard. In fact, Thanos pulled their souls into the Soul Gem and left their bodies on whatever planet they were to just die or stay there. With the help of others, they were able to escape the Soul Gem and get back into their bodies. And so now their purpose is that they're going to go warn the universe. Specifically, Silver Surfer is on his way to Earth to warn the Avengers and all of the Earth heroes about Thanos and the Infinity Gems and all this stuff going on. And so he's on his way there, him and Drax. And just real quick on Drax, he is not the Drax that you know from the Guardians of the Galaxy movies. He's this super strong buff guy, and his whole purpose in life is to kill Thanos. He was given that mission by Kronos. You know, so back in the 70s in the comics, Drax the Destroyer was this character that was created by Kronos to kill Thanos. That was his mission. And during that time, he was actually killed. I think it was at the same time Thanos was killed. Drax the Destroyer was killed. And Warlock, pretty big death count in that issue. That might be worthy of its own Comics Cave episode also, going back and revisiting that. But anyway, Drax was killed at one point, but once Thanos was resurrected, once death resurrected Thanos, Kronos created Drax again. But at this point, he's really stupid and just single-minded. All he can think about is killing Thanos. He doesn't think very well, but he's been working with and, of course, fought Silver Surfer as well. But it's almost like the cosmic version of the Hulk at this point. I mean, he is big and massive, and he is green, and he wears purple clothes and a cape. I don't know. I guess purple and green work really well on the page. But anyway, yeah, he's totally different, especially this version of Drax, than the Dave Bautista version that you've seen in the MCU. And that's really to take nothing away from the MCU version of Drax. They're totally different, but they both totally work as used in their ways. But anyway, so Drax is only here in the opening scenes of this comic. Silver Surfer says, you know what? I feel the presence of my old master, my old boss, Galactus. There's something I need to talk to him about. So you go on ahead. I'll meet up with you. I need to go take care of something. And so he diverts off and goes away from Drax the Destroyer to go meet with Galactus. And along the way, he meets up with Nova, who is the current herald of Galactus. And they have a history, you know, when he first when this volume of the Silver Surfer started up, they actually had a little love affair for a while, but not anymore because, you know, she's more than willing to do Galactus's bidding. And of course, Norrin Rad, the Silver Surfer, always tried to find dead worlds without life on it. Well, not always, but mostly tried to. And so anyway, there's a history there with Nova and Silver Surfer. But at this point, they're just friends, right? But he tells her that he's looking for Galactus and he needs to talk to him alone. So pretty much saying to stay away. And he takes off, leaves Nova hanging out there. And he has some nagging concerns, things that he's learned about himself when he's been out here flying around the cosmos and encountering different people and things like that. And so, yeah, he does finally meet up with Galactus, who is standing above a world that he's about to destroy. And, you know, he's like, announces himself. He's like, "Galactus, has the time come for yet another planet to fall prey to your insatiable appetite?" And of course, you know, Galactus has heard this all before. And so he's a little defensive. He says, "It is, but this is an uninhabited hunk of rock and no concern of yours, my former herald." And then the Silver Surfer says, "That one time position of mine is exactly what I have come to discuss." "Norrin Rad," says Galactus, "I sense anger where respect and caution would prove more appropriate." So yeah, they have an interesting relationship. And man, I just love the art. I can't say enough about the art of this. I mean, just the image of Galactus himself and the image of the Silver Surfer flying around Galactus and space in the background. Man, I just love it. It's so iconic to me. I've fallen in love with that from the minute I saw it. I think I saw it in an old, what was it, Eclipse Comics? Is when the first time I ever saw Galactus and the Silver Surfer. And they're just stunning. I really need to find a really good poster of the Silver Surfer and Galactus. I just love the look. And Ron Lim does a fantastic job here with all of this stuff. But anyway, you know, Galactus kind of recaps. "You offered yourself up for me to spare your homeworld of Zenla." He says, "I agreed to the bargain. I granted you cosmic powers and you became my herald for a time and became the Silver Surfer." And it's interesting. He gives a little insight in here, which I had never known before reading this. And maybe this is the first time it's been discussed, but he says, "My might gave birth to a fanciful creation I gleaned from your own mind." And then the Silver Surfer says, "Yes, the Surfer was an adolescent fantasy I had long kept to myself. Through your power, I became the reality of my own dreams." And so that's something that I had never known before, because it is kind of funny, and people have made jokes about, you know, where did the image, I mean, the Silver Surfer is pretty cool, but just the stark idea, if you think about it, outside of knowing who he is in the comics, why would you need a surfboard out in space? That's kind of a strange thing to do. And, you know, of course that came from the 60s, right? And, you know, of course there was lots of surfers way before that, but it was kind of a big thing. And so, yeah, when Stan Lee and Jack Kirby created the Silver Surfer, they were drawing on that aesthetic. But anyway, this is the first time, I think, in universe where they're saying where the image of the surfer came from. And it was, I guess they surfed on Zenla. And that was something that Norrin Rad fantasized about. And so that's why he became the surfer in space, because all the other heralds of Galactus, while they have transformations, like Nova, you know, she was an earthling. She was Frankie Ray. At one point, she was a girlfriend of Johnny Storm. But then who hasn't been a girlfriend of Johnny Storm? Even I have been a girlfriend. Well, no, hold on. Never mind. But anyway, and she was transformed into Nova. And so she's like this, a golden skinned person with flaming hair and things like that. So anyway, And maybe that came from her image, something that Galactus pulled out of her mind. And so that was interesting, I thought. And then Galactus goes on to say, "In my service, you became and remain a unique and powerful being. It was a good deal you struck. But now we get to the crux of why the Silver Surfer wants to talk to Galactus." And he asks, "Was it?" The Surfer goes on to explain. He says, "Some time ago, I encountered a powerful madman named Garnock Raban. He was an interplanetary mass murderer. When I confronted him with his crimes, he challenged my right to judge him. He claimed my past association with you made me as guilty as him. For some unexplainable reason, his accusations caused me tremendous mental turmoil. I suffered terrible hallucinations. They passed, but I began to wonder. I aided you in the destruction of hundreds of worlds, abetted the deaths of millions of poor souls. Yet I've never felt any great guilt over this matter. How can that be?" And if you think about it, and we're going to think about it, yeah, you know, we always see the Silver Surfer as this hero that stood up against Galactus and has fought along the side of good. And he's kind of a galactic Boy Scout, really, in these adventures that he's been in. And so we don't think about, yeah, for how many worlds did he help Galactus consume? And not all of them were uninhabited. And that's why I was so interested in that Prodigal Son issue that I talked about, but that'll be for another time. And Galactus says, he says, "I had hoped that your mighty powers would spare you such confrontations, but I should have realized that hope was doomed. Knowing your penchant for righting wrongs and protecting the weak." The Silver Surfer pauses, and then he says, "Just recently there was another incident. While trapped in a strange plane of existence called Soul World, I met a being called Adam Warlock. He had the eerie power to look into my soul. Do you know what his inspection found? Alterations, modification, tampering. Someone had manipulated the workings of my spirit. Was that someone you?" So yeah, direct confrontation here with Galactus. "What did you do to me? Why don't I feel guilty about these things?" And Galactus simply says, "Yes." He admits it. Of course, this makes the Silver Surfer more angry. And, you know, he says, "Our agreement was that you would give me power in order to serve and obey you. Thus I did faithfully for decades. There was never any mentioning of tampering with my soul." You know, pretty much saying, "Why would you do this?" And Galactus simply explains. He says, "Norrin Rad was an honorable man. He would not have been capable of carrying out certain desires of mine without undergoing delicate personality alterations." And again, the Silver Surfer just has to consider this. He has to come to terms with that. And Galactus, you know, in his way, just stares down, glowering at him. But then the Surfer demands, he says, "Undo your handiwork, mighty Galactus. Allow me to be the man I should be." And Galactus says, you know, "Your wish can be easily realized, but are you certain this is what you want?" And Silver Surfer says, "Yes." But Galactus goes on to warn him. He says, "The soul can be a merciless tormentor," but Surfer says to do it. And so, as if he were Wesley in The Princess Bride, Galactus says, "As you wish," and puts out his hand and takes that part away. Galactus says it is done, and initially the Silver Surfer doesn't feel anything, but Galactus tells him that it's a subtle epiphany. He's like, "What do you mean?" And then he starts to bleed from his hands, and he starts to experience great pain. You know, and then he says, you know, "Just like my delirium on Alana." Galactus says, "Guilt." So he knew the guilt that the Surfer would feel here. And the Surfer, you know, begins to say, "You know, but yeah, but I wasn't in this much agony last time." And The blood from his hands starts to drip down and run over his board and then fall down to the ground. And eventually the blood builds up and comes over his board and starts to bury him. And he talks about, you know, how much agony he's in. And then in the captions, you know, he says, "The floodgates are now fully open, an infinite river of guilt over the dead of a thousand worlds. It all becomes so horrifyingly clear. My dark and terrible sins come screeching from their dungeon. They seek vengeance on the psyche that so long imprisoned them. Razor-sharp guilt slashes away at the comforting illusions of ego and self-delusion. My life is exposed for the sham that it truly is. The mask of self-righteous virtue is torn from my face. I am forced to gaze deeply into the mirror of self-realization. All hope crumbles within my desperate grasp. I am lost." And as he's talking, the blood just comes up and overtakes him until he's like drowning in blood and, you know, falling into the depths of this sea of blood. And then you see this hand reach down into the blood. He says, "Norrin Rad." And then Galactus picks him up in the palm of his hand, pulls him out of the blood, and tells him to awaken. And so, yeah, this really powerful imagery. And I love the narration there. And just, you know, you can really, you know, I've never thought about it before, but yeah, the guilt that the Silver Surfer would have for all of these beings and worlds that were killed while he served Galactus. Galactus knew that that would come, and he knew what the Silver Surfer would face, and that he wouldn't be a good herald if he hadn't changed this, you know, kind of numbed his mind to that guilt when he made him his herald. And so I love that. It's just digging into the mythos of who the Silver Surfer is in Galactus and what he's gone through. It's great stuff, really good stuff. That's why I'm talking about it here with you. So the Silver Surfer realizes that the blood and the pain was all an illusion. Galactus says that a troubled mind is a frightening haven and a dangerous one. He tells him, he says, "It's not too late. What has been done can be reversed." But Silver Surfer kind of gets his bearings and he stands up on his surfboard and he says, "No, I have a past and sins I must learn to accept and live with and take responsibility for. Too long have I hidden away in the cozy harbor of self-deceit. Never again. I will either come to terms with my soul's burden or die trying. A man can live no other way and remain a man." So yeah, you know, very bum, bum, bum. But anyway, I get that, you know. He gets strength from accepting his past, accepting who he was, what he's done, but not letting that, as it did just moments before, drown him. He's going to take responsibility for it, and he's going to try to make up for it in living the rest of his life. And that really is, I mean, it really is a spiritual thing. It's something that we as human beings could take to heart. You know, how many people don't live their lives because they have so much regret for the things, the mistakes that they've made in the past, the things that they've done wrong, the people that they've hurt. I mean, I have things that I regret and I wish that I hadn't hurt somebody in some way, or I wish I would have been more intelligent, emotionally intelligent. I think we can learn a lot here from the Silver Surfer in that we need to live. That's who we are. That's what we've done, but we need to be better now. We need to accept that and move on. And so I really, this is a great job done right in the middle of all this other action and stuff that's going on. There's this really cool little issue here that focuses really personally on the surfer. Yeah, it's good stuff. I like it. But then the Silver Surfer says, well, he doesn't say thank you, but he says that he has to leave, that Earth has to be warned about the awesome danger of Thanos. And Galactus says, I've heard of this creature.
And Silver Surfer tells him, you'll hear more about him. The Dark Titan is now a force all the universe must reckon with. Even your great might, Lord Galactus, is nothing compared to the power he wields. So that's saying a lot there. And I love the respect. You know, he's calling him Lord Galactus. And he's said things like that earlier, too. Even though he was angry and mad at Galactus, he still, you know, has this respect for him and the power that he wields. Galactus says that he's above the petty cares of the universe and that he's a singular power that none dares to challenge. And Silver Surfer says, well, I hope you're right, but maybe not this time. And then he leaves and takes off towards Earth. And we stay on Galactus at this point. And then Thanos appears to Galactus and says, even from the mouth of babes can wisdom be found. And it's just his voice at this point. And then Galactus says, show yourself, evil one. The stench of your soul befouls the air. I love the language of comics, especially when you read it out loud. And Thanos does appear and says, not a very cordial greeting from one who claims galactic status. What business has Thanos of Titan with mighty Galactus? Galactus says, of course. He is but the bearer of glad tidings and sage advice. Galactus asks him if this advice is a veil for a threat. And Thanos says, merely a warning. Says, there are matters afoot that would be foolish to meddle in. Foolish even for beings of near infinite power like yourself. And then Galactus asks him, what if I choose not to avail myself of such wise counsel? And Thanos smiles and says, even legends die. And they talk a little bit more, but eventually Thanos disappears, goes away. But Galactus, you know, says probably more to himself, says, Thanos, this is not the end of this encounter. And so again, it's building all this up, right? We're going, building up to the Infinity Gauntlet crossover event. And so, yeah, it's Starlin did a really good job of, I mean, this, like I said, it's a year and a half or more build up to this, this big event. And then Mephisto makes a little appearance here because he's with Thanos. It's a whole long story, but essentially, Mephisto, because he wants the power of the Infinity Stones. Dang it. Because he wants the power of the Infinity Gems as well. He's kind of sidled up next to Thanos and kind of begged fealty to him. But of course, he's got his own goals in mind. But anyway, Mephisto's with Thanos talking about Galactus. And he says, defiant, isn't he? And Thanos says, injudicious. And that's the last we see of Thanos in this issue, except we focus in on his gauntlet where he's got the 6 Infinity Gems, and it focuses in on the Soul Gem. And then we go into the gem and into Soul World, and there is gathered the residents there in Soul World. We have Adam Warlock. We have Gamora. And this, again, Gamora is really different in the comics than she was in the Guardians of the Galaxy and the other Marvel movies. But again, I like what they did in the movies. But yeah, she is a really different character in the comics. And Pip the Troll is also there. We saw Pip the Troll. What was it? It was the mid-credits scene of the Eternals, right? That he shows up with Star Fox, who was played by Harry Styles, and then Pip the Troll was voiced by Patton Oswalt, right? So yeah, we'll have Pip the Troll in the comics. But yeah, at this point, Gamora and Pip the Troll and eventually Drax the Destroyer are all tied to Adam Warlock during and then after, especially after Infinity Gauntlet. And all that kind of stuff. In fact, they even have their own comic. I think it was called Warlock and the Infinity Watch or something like that. So anyway, seems like that on Soul World, Adam Warlock has gathered all of the residents together, everybody that's in Soul World, where he's kind of become the king or the ruler of Soul World. You know, he says, a decision must be determined. Says Thanos, now possesses the 6 Infinity Gems, including the one that we reside in. With them, all things are possible for him. He seeks to paint the heavens with his perverted ideology, and there may be no way to stop him. We can either remain here, hoping to ride out the storm, praying for salvation, or we can aid those who stand against Thanos' insane march to omnipotence. Past experience has taught me that turning a blind eye to evil only strengthens it. But delusion is a double-edged sword. Thanos thinks me dead and out of his life. His cosmos-spanning plans and schemes don't take my existence into consideration. I may prove to be a wild card in this game of galactic upheaval. So, Adam Warlock chooses to join the struggle. Dun, 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 and that's the end of the issue. And so again, after the Silver Surfer leaves Galactus, we have a little confrontation with Thanos. Then we go into the Soul Gem and hear that Adam Warlock is going to join the fray. I don't remember how he gets out of the Soul Gem or how they all get out of the Soul Gem. But anyway, that's another tale for another time. But yeah, again, it's setting up the Infinity Gauntlet and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I really like this comic. Hopefully you've enjoyed it. I really wanted to get into the deep Silver Surfer psychology there. And yeah, that him facing his demons. And I really like that in this episode. But it's also, hopefully you've also kind of felt the ride or got a taste of the world and the events that are going on at this time in the Silver Surfer comic. And I think this run of Jim Starlin is great, and all the stuff that comes after it. Like I said, it does kind of become convoluted after a while, and it's just Infinity this, Infinity that, and then we get into crossover hell for a while there after Infinity Gauntlet. But Infinity Gauntlet was such an amazing crossover event, and it was just a really fun read. And, you know, of course, we've seen how that played out in the MCU, you know, with Infinity War and Endgame and all the stuff that led up to that, right, with Thanos and everything. But, yeah, I love that interpretation of it as well. It is different than what we had in the comics, and that's okay. It doesn't have to be the same. In fact, it's kind of cool that it's different, that we can enjoy what's in the comics, but we can also enjoy what we've seen on the movie screen with all this stuff. And I'm sure it'll be the same with Secret Wars that they're building up to and stuff like that. So yeah, you know, I could go on and on and on talking about all this stuff and more stuff with the Silver Surfer, more stuff with Thanos, more stuff with Galactus. Well, I don't know. Silver Surfer and Galactus kind of go hand in hand for the most part, but there is other stuff with Galactus that I could go on about, I guess. But yeah, that's what I wanted you to hear. That's why I invited you to the cave this time, is to hear about the past sins of the Silver Surfer. And yeah, it's representative of the things that I like about the Silver Surfer. And, you know, the more you dig into it, the better it is. And, there's some other stuff about, things he forgot about, when he was on Zen Law and stuff with his father and his girlfriend Shalabal and things like that. That goes a little bit more deeper into it. But anyway, that's a tale for another time. That's another visit to the cave that we may get to at some point.
Hey, this is Marshall from the future here, and I'm here to introduce a new segment of the show. I don't think I'll do it every time, but every once in a while, I wanted to get it on here and talk about comics that I'm reading on Marvel Unlimited, because I am continuously reading different things, and I only talk about one thing or a couple issues during a normal Comics Cave episode.
But like I said, I thought every once in a while I'd get on here and talk about what comics have I read lately. So now we will join our program already in progress.
Well, I guess I've been reading a lot of Silver Surfer lately to prepare for this episode. But no, just some of the other things that I'm kind of reading on a regular basis. Of course, I'm keeping up with the Fantastic Four. And they just finished a huge... So Dan Slott started writing the Fantastic Four in this latest, I guess it's volume 3 as well, that started back in 2015, because there wasn't a Fantastic Four comic for quite a while, at least a few years. And so they brought it back, and Dan Slott was the head writer for it. And he's done a really great job. I really like his take on the characters. He's brought them back as, you know, the core family. They've expanded the family of the Fantastic Four. Really, the Fantastic Four is a misnomer. And I know they had the Freedom Foundation there for a while, and they had a bunch of side characters and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's really expanded since in this new run on the Fantastic Four that just finished up. But it's been a great run. I hope it's going to continue to be great. The latest thing that I read about, you know, he finished off this thing with this Reckoning War that involved, really involved all of the Watchers. And what I really liked about it, it was this, you know, universe in jeopardy, super huge event, but it wasn't a crossover with all of the other Marvel universe like they do so much now. You know, every year they have to come up with something else that all of the Marvel villains have to face, and it has a crossover in everybody's comic. And that can be a really fun thing. Like I'm going to talk a lot today about Infinity Gauntlet and things like that, which was a great event. But then they can just become, okay, every year we're going to have this big crossover thing, and it's going to affect everybody, and then everything is going to go back to normal after that event is done. And it gets old hat after a while. But what I liked about this Reckoning War is it was all contained within the Fantastic Four comic. It did involve other heroes in the Marvel Universe, some more than others. And that, you know, they made mention of the Avengers helping out with this or that or the other. But it wasn't a crossover event. I don't think there were other comics. There may have been other comics that interacted with things, because the Earth was being attacked and the moon was taken away for a while during the Reckoning War. So it did have massive effects, and it may have bled in to other comic books, but it wasn't one of those major crossover events. And I guess time-wise, it was a fairly short amount of time that it would have affected the Earth. So, you know, maybe it just wasn't addressed in other comics. But when I heard about the Reckoning War and saw the build-up to it, I thought, oh, great, here we go. Yeah, it's revolving around the Fantastic Four, but it's going to be this huge, big thing, and I'm going to have to read all these other comics and things like that. But no. It was all contained within the Fantastic Four comic book. And that was refreshing. That was fun. That was good. And it finished the run, Dan Slott's run, really strong. And so I guess he's going to go back to Spider-Man. I guess there's mixed reviews about Dan Slott's previous run on Spider-Man. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts about that, but I wasn't reading comics at the time. So that may be something that I cover again on another episode of the Comics Cave. There's so much that we could talk about just within the Marvel Universe here on the Comics Cave. And at one point, maybe I will talk about some issues within the Reckoning War, but right now I'm not going to go into any details other than, yeah, it did affect every member. There was big things going on with all the members of the Fantastic Four, all of them and their families and other side characters. I mean, not everybody didn't have a big part, but yeah, it involved everybody. Everybody was important. And it really was expansive. I mean, everybody in the cosmic universe got involved, it seems like. And, but again, it was all contained within the Fantastic Four. So that's something I've been reading. I pick and choose things every once in a while. Oh, that looks interesting. And I read a little bit of Damage Control, which was something from back in the 80s. And now they're trying to bring it back in a new incarnation. And it's kind of a comedic comic. And, you know, the heroes are kind of the side characters in this one. And it's interesting and it was fun, but I don't know. I must not be in the same space I was when I liked Damage Control. The cool thing about it is, like, these really, like, Moon Knight was in it. Nightcrawler was in it from the X-Men. A lot of really cool cameo characters, but they're just kind of on the side. Like, they were doing a job interview for an intern to work at Damage Control in a coffee shop, and Moon Knight was in line to get his coffee, all dressed in his costume and stuff like that. So he was just this little side thing. So that was kind of fun. But, and then, you know, I guess, you know, the comic itself, it was good and fun and everything. I just don't know if it's my bag anymore. but I'll probably read the rest of them. I'm guessing it's a limited series. But yeah, I'll pick up things. Fantastic Four is really the only one I read ongoing, but I read a lot of limited series stuff. I was reading, I need to get back to it, but there was a Spider-Man 2099 limited series that came out, and I read the first couple issues of that, and I want to finish that up. But I noticed that there's a new Spider-Man 2099 limited series out there. So maybe they're just going to keep going with doing Spider-Man 2099 comics. But yeah, though, I liked those back in the day. That was the only good 2099 comic back in the day. Well, I guess Doom 2099 was kind of good too. But what else? Oh, they're doing a retro thing of Wolverine as Patch. You know, when he started his own comic book, when he was still in the X-Men, he kind of took on this persona of Patch, and he did a lot of stuff in Madripoor. So there was a lot of adventures there. And there's this limited series called Wolverine Patch that goes back into that timeline. You know, it's not taking place now. It's injected back into that. And they brought back Larry Hama to write it. I guess he wrote some of those old Wolverine comics. That may have been after I stopped reading comics. I can't remember. But Larry Hama is known, right, for his G.I. Joe comics. And he's kind of a good little storyteller that I forgot about. So that's kind of been fun to go back and read. I kind of remember liking Wolverine as Patch, even though that was the start of the Wolverine apocalypse upon the comics. You know, once Wolverine had his own solo comic, he took over and he was in every single comic eventually. But for a long time, he was just contained within the X-Men, and everything you needed to know about Wolverine was within one comic book. And he did have that limited series that was really successful that Frank Miller won. And then he had the Wolverine and Kitty Pryde limited series. But even after that, for a long time, Wolverine was just in X-Men, just in X-Men comics. But once he branched out, it took over. But anyway, yeah, so that's kind of fun. And they've done some things like that. Like there was a, what was it called? X-Men, I don't want to say Legends. So that doesn't sound right. But it was an X-Men comic that would take, we're going to go back to 1989 and this, when this was going on with the X-Men, and we're going to add this little story to it. Or X-Factor, the original X-Factor with the original X-Men in it. We're going to go back and we're going to do this little story that takes place between this issue and this issue. And they bring back like Louis Simonson and the other creators that were part of X-Factor back in the day, or X-Men. X-Men Legends, I think, is what it was called. Yeah, and it was like, like little single issue arc. And they bring the creative team back from when they were writing the comic. And they have this other little hidden adventure that happened. And, you know, it could have been one issue or two issues. I think there was one even little three-issue thing. I think it lasted for 12 issues. And then I just saw another one come in not too long ago that looks like they're going to do another run of these. And so, yeah, that's fun. You know, they had Roy Thomas come back in the latest one to tell the story of the new team of X-Men before Giant Size X-Men number one, when Wolverine and Storm and Nightcrawler, you know, the new, all new, all different X-Men started up with Giant Size X-Men number one, or, and then, you know, the rest is history from there. But he brings on the team, like what was going on with Wolverine before that, or Storm or whatever. And so he kind of started that. And yeah, I'm interested to read more of those for sure. I don't know what else, a couple more. Oh, yeah, I guess I did start to read Kevin Smith's issues of Daredevil. You know, there was a time, I think it was in the late 90s. Well, it would have been in the 90s because that's when Kevin Smith became big. But anyway, he came in and he wrote several issues of Daredevil. And so it was Kevin Smith's take on Daredevil. And I've always been intrigued by that. But so I looked it up and started to read that. I think I read the first issue and I haven't gone back yet. But yeah, just little things like that. It's fun to go in and read. They did come out with a Star Wars Mandalorian comic. And so I checked that out. It was just a retelling of the episodes from the TV show, which is kind of cool to see in comic book form, but I probably won't follow that. If it was like New Adventures of the Mandalorian that we hadn't seen on Disney Plus, I might start looking at that again. But I think that'd be interesting to see what they do. Of course, it'll never be as good as the TV show. I used to try to keep up with some of the Star Wars comics, but I don't know. It's kind of diminishing returns on some of that stuff because, you know, they're telling their new tales and it's supposed to take place right after Empire Strikes Back or right after Star Wars or something like that. And fill in the gaps of what happened in between the movies or whatever. There's a lot of cool things that can be done there, but I guess you always have to keep in the back of your mind that, you know, yeah, they might say this is canon, but this is just somebody's Star Wars tale that they want to tell with these characters. It's not necessarily true to what's going on. You know, they're not, if they wanted to change something in the movies, they wouldn't hold themselves to what happened in a comic book. I just don't see that happening. So yeah, I have read some Star Wars stuff because Marvel has Star Wars now, and it's interesting, but yeah, I don't go back to it a lot. A year or so ago, they seem to be doing these like mini arcs. And well, I talked about that Prodigal Son one that I read, but it was Fantastic Four, Prodigal Son was the first issue. And it talked about how the Prodigal Son character dealt with Fantastic Four, or his dealings with the Fantastic Four. And then the next issue features the Silver Surfer and his interactions with him. And then the third issue was Guardians of the Galaxy, Prodigal Son. And so it's a little arc in and of itself, but the issues themselves are like single issue things. It's kind of a strange thing. Well, they did the same kind of thing with a little arc with the Man-Thing. I think it started with, I can't remember the order of it, but there was like an Avengers Curse of the Man-Thing, a Spider-Man Curse of the Man-Thing, and there was one other comic. Oh, and then X-Men Curse of the Man-Thing. And that was an interesting thing. I could do a Comics Cave issue about it, but I don't know if I feel passionate enough about it to really put my heart into it. It was interesting and I kind of enjoyed it, but it wasn't that great. So we did kind of get into some Ted Salas stuff in it though. they like went into, I think Spider-Man went into the mindscape of the Man-Thing and he interacted with Ted Salas. And maybe the Lizard did too. It's hard to, I'd have to go back and read those again to remember the thing. So it was interesting and I enjoyed it, but I don't know if I would bring that here to the Comics Cave, but you never know. Don't count it out. You never know. But yeah, so those are some of the things that I've been looking at on my Marvel Unlimited subscription. But yeah, thanks for coming. Be careful on the way out. Don't slip on the damp floor there. And we'll come back again for another Comics Cave episode. Definitely next time. It will be about the Fantastic Four. So stay tuned for that coming up in February. And we'll see you next time. You're here in the cave.
The audio from this podcast is exclusive to patreon.com/journeyinto.